topic that initially I was hesitant about speaking about for a variety of reasons, but came to the conclusion that it's sometimes important to express reality, even if you have certain cheshbonos that you don't always want to say things the way that they are. But I think it's something which is particularly relevant to everybody sitting here, and taka not relevant to anybody who's not here. So because it's particularly relevant to the vast majority, the exclusion maybe of one particular individual, it's relevant to most of the people who are sitting here. I decided that I will talk about the topic. One of the strangest tzivuyim, one of the strangest mitzvahs asay that exist in the Torah appears in this week's parsha. This week's actually two parshas. But in the second parsha that we read this week, there's a mitzvah asay. In fact, the parsha starts off with a mitzvah asay. The mitzvah asay that the parsha starts off with is a very strange one. The parsha starts off with a mitzvah asay of Kadoshim Tihiyu. Which simplistically means that there is a positive commandment in the Torah that an individual has an obligation to be a Kaddish. Well, what is a Kaddish? Well, one of the people who talk about what is a Kaddish or what is Kedusha is the Maseiros Yesharim. He talks about it because the whole of the Sefer of the Maseiros Yesharim is based on a brisa which talks about various levels that a person can achieve. And the pre-ultimate level that a person can achieve is the level of Kedusha. Because the whole of the Maseiros Yesharim is based on the brisa, which starts at the minimal levels and then works its way upwards, therefore the chapter that discusses the definition of Kedusha is towards the end of the Maseiros Yesharim. And as we all know, most of us never get to the end of Sforim. We always start them with a lot of aspiration and a lot of cheshek and a lot of good intent, but we actually never get really past the first few chapters. And the Maseiros Yesharim's definition of what is Kedusha appears in chapter 26. Very few people actually get to chapter 26 in the Maseiros Yesharim. But if you look there in the Maseiros Yesharim, how he defines Kedusha, he says that the level preceding Kedusha is a level called Taira. And somebody who achieves that is called a Tohar. And then there's a level above that, which is called Kedusha. And somebody who achieves that is a Kaddish. Says Maseiros Yesharim, what's the difference between a Tohar and a Kaddish? He says the difference between a Torah and a Kaddish is that the Torah is involved in materialistic activities, but he sees them as being a necessity. Therefore, he minimizes them. That which is absolutely necessary, he's involved in. That which is not absolutely necessary, which is the material activity, he's not involved in. And other than the absolute necessities of material activities, all that he's involved in are spiritual matters. So what's the Kaddish, which is the level above that? The Kaddish, which is the level above that, says the Maseiros Yesharim, is Dovek Tomid Be'aleikov. Somebody who's totally Dovuk to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And then he goes on and on and on, talking about the greatness and the darga of the person who is a Kaddish, who is totally, totally dovuk in the Ribbono Shel Olam. To such a degree, he says, that we can view the person, Hu Atzmoy, the Kaddish himself, Nechshav, is considered Kemizbeach u Kemishkan. He's a person who's achieved the darga that he himself is like a Beis Hamikdash, he's like a Mizbeach, right? He's the ultimate in spirituality. And therefore, Hamachal Shehem Eichlin, when this Kaddish eats, he's eating a korban. It's like the consumption of a korban. And then he says, if you reach that darga, where you're totally, totally, completely, utterly, 1000% spiritual, then you can reach the ultimate darga, and the ultimate darga is, you can reach Nevuah, you can reach Ruach HaKodesh. That's the definition of a Kaddish. That's the definition of Kedusha. And Kedusha may be the Ruach HaKodesh. So are we expected to believe that the Torah comes along and the Torah says that we should look around at the group of people sitting here and say about them that they have an obligation to become a Mishkan, a Mizbeach, that their eating is going to be Kekorban? May the Almighty help us all. It's not, it doesn't make sense that that's what the Torah is demanding of us. Plus the fact that there seems to be an inherent problem here. And the inherent problem is that the minute you reach a darga like that, where you're totally dovuk to the Ribbono Shel Olam, where you are a Mishkan, where you are a Mikdash, where you're eating as a Korban, you're totally divorced from a material world. Basically, you're not a human being anymore. Basically, you're a Malach. And in fact, when the Ribbono Shel Olam was about to give Moshe Rabbeinu the Torah, when Moshe Rabbeinu was B'Shamayim, Chazal tell us that the Malachim came with a Taina to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and the Ribbono Shel Olam said, and the Malachim said to the Ribbono Shel Olam, Tnu Haidcha L'Shamayim, what are you giving Torah for to human beings with all their failings? Give Torah to us. To which Moshe Rabbeinu turned round and said to the Ribbono Shel Olam, Torah is given to human beings who have Bechira. The Torah is talking about issues which are dependent upon Bechira. The Torah says you shouldn't have hatred towards another person, you shouldn't have kinah towards another person. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, can angels have hatred? Can angels have kinah? They can't, because they have no Bechira. So therefore you see that Torah is meant to be given to human beings. So therefore the Taina of the Malachim, Tnu Haidcha L'Shamayim, is a ridiculous Taina. And the Ribbono Shel Olam, say Chazal, agrees with Moshe Rabbeinu, and therefore Torah is given to human beings. But then if the function of the human being is to become an angel, then are we trying to say that the whole point of Torah is only for a limited period of time, and the guy who manages to do it in 24 months, because it's possible, we know that. I mean, there are guys in Eivari who become worlds, Talmidei Chacham, and consider themselves to be Mamish Gedolei Yisrael after having learned 10 minutes for 2 years. Right? So it's obviously possible. Does that mean that, no, there's no more new Torah for them anymore? Finished, it's all over. It can't be. But this is not my problem. This is the problem that Chazal had. Chazal had this problem. Chazal and the Sifra had this problem. They said, how do you understand this tzivui in the Torah of Kedei Shem Tiyu? So came along Chazal, and Chazal said, you're mistranslating the word Kedoshim. Kedoshim, in the context of when the Torah says Kedoshim Tiyu, the Torah is not talking about holiness. The Torah is not talking about Kedusha in its normal sense. When the Torah says Kedoshim, the Torah means something else, because the word Kodesh in the Torah says Chazal has a variety of meanings. It's a word that has many meanings, and in this context of Kedoshim Tiyu, it doesn't mean holy. It means something else. Say Chazal, what does it mean? Say Chazal, Kedoshim Tiyu, Perushim Tiyu. What's the literal translation of Perushim? Separated. That's the Chazal. Says the Ramban, at the beginning of this week's Parsha, what do Chazal mean when they say that there is a positive commandment in the Torah that a person has to be Kodesh, which means that he has to be Porush? Says the Ramban, the Gemara uses the expression Prushim. And we know what the expression Prushim means in the Torah, therefore we know what the expression Kedoshim means in the Torah. Says the Ramban, how does the Gemara use the expression Prushim? What does the word Prushim mean in the Gemara? The word Prushim in the Gemara is the description given in the Gemara for a Talmud Chacham. Therefore, says the Ramban, it's Ramban at the beginning of this week's Parsha. It's the first Ramban on this week's Parsha. Says the Ramban, therefore, the positive commandment in the Torah of Kedoshim Tiyu is that it is obligatory upon every Jewish male to become a Talmud Chacham. What is the definition of a Talmud Chacham? Continues the Ramban, and the Ramban gives us the definition of how he understands what is a Talmud Chacham. A Talmud Chacham, says the Ramban, is not an encyclopedia. Or as my Rebbe Rabbi Lapkin used to say, a Talmud Chacham is not a bookcase. That which contains a lot of Sforim, Rabbi Leib Zichron Livracha used to say, is called a bookcase. It's not called a Talmud Chacham. The fact that a person has accumulated knowledge does not give him the definition of being a Talmud Chacham, says the Ramban. It may give him the definition of being a knowledgeable person. He may be somebody who is a Yadin. He may be somebody who is knowledgeable. But he's not a Talmud Chacham. What is the definition of a Talmud Chacham? Says the Ramban, the definition of a Talmud Chacham is somebody who has a particular perspective on life. The definition of a Talmud Chacham is somebody who sees things in a very specific manner. Says the Ramban, the definition of a Talmud Chacham is somebody who sees things objectively. He sees things the way that they really are. Says the Ramban, when a Talmud Chacham, as the Gemara says, is more particular about certain things than an Amoritz is, we find, says the Ramban in the Gemara, that the Gemara says, there's certain things which are totally muta, and therefore the Amoritz views them as being permissible. The Talmud Chacham is noyeg isur. Says the Ramban, that's not frumkeit. That's not because the Talmud Chacham is frumer than the Amoritz. That is because the Talmud Chacham's perception is different than the Amoritz. The Talmud Chacham, says the Ramban, is aware that a human being is a synthesis. He's a synthesis of material and spiritual. He's a guf and he's a neshama. And because the Talmud Chacham is aware that a human being is a synthesis between guf and neshama, between material and spiritual, and because the Talmud Chacham has a knack or an ability to analyze, Because, in the phraseology of the Ramban, he's an Amkin. He knows how to get into the depths of Torah. He also knows how to get into the depths of human psychology. Yedea Nefesh Behemta. He understands who he is, and he understands how he works, and he understands how the human personality works. And therefore, he knows how to relate to things in a certain way in order to be protective of himself, in order that he should be able to do the right thing and not do the wrong thing. The word parush means literally separated. When you're close up to something, you don't see the woods for the trees. You don't get a clear picture. When you get a clear picture about something, when you stand back, take a step back and look at it. Distance from something creates an accurate perception of the object. A parush is a Talmud Chacham, and the definition of a Talmud Chacham is the ability to perceive things the way that they really are. Well, how does one achieve that? How does one become a Talmud Chacham? Well, perhaps one of the best examples of an individual who became a Talmud Chacham is somebody who plays a role in these weeks of the Sfira. Perhaps the classic example of the guy who started from nowhere at the age of 40, who didn't know how to read, and reached a darga where Chazal say that Moshe Rabbeinu is listening to a shir of his and he can't understand it because the shir is too deep for Moshe Rabbeinu, is Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, who started learning at the age of 40. It's a phenomena which has never happened since in the history of Kol Yisrael. We live in a generation where there's plenty of Balei Tshuva. And there are plenty of Balei Tshuva who started at a very late point in life and who became learned people. But nobody reached the darga of being the Gadol B'Yisrael. That hasn't happened. That hasn't happened. And we have all sorts of pat answers as to why it hasn't happened. Because they're missing the formative years, the years to the young, because of blah, 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 blah. But Rabbi Akiva was also missing all that. And Rabbi Akiva made it. How? How did Rabbi Akiva become the Talmud Chacham that he became? There are three anecdotes which are told to us about Rabbi Akiva. A Midrash, it's in the Midrash HaGadol, a Gemara, a Bavli, and a Yerushalmi. Rabbi Akiva was the ultimate definition of an Amoritz, Chazal tell us. At the age of 40, he knew nothing. His wife managed to persuade him to go and learn. It was a problem. He was a 40-year-old man. He couldn't read. So he registered, say Chazal, in the local cheder. Came along, spoke to the principal. He said, I want to learn. Principal said, fine. What do you know? He said, zilch. Nothing. Can you read? No. Okay, fine. Put him in the Aleph base class. Can you envisage the scene? There are 36 5-year-old brats sitting in a class, spitting at each other, throwing things at each other, doing the things that we all did when we were 5-4 years old, sitting in a class. And a 40-year-old man with his notebook and his laptop and his dictionary. And he's sitting in this environment very conducive to learning. And he comes home after the first day, say Chazal, and he says to his wife, that's it. That's it. They expect me to be able to learn in a class of 30, 45 year olds who, A, the environment's not conducive to learning, and B, they're laughing at me the whole time. Right, Grandpa, what are you doing here? Say Chazal, that Rabbi Akiva and his wife were paupers. She'd been disowned by her father, who was a multimillionaire, and they owned nothing. Say Chazal, they did have one thing, and that's how they managed to survive. They had a cow. The cow had a disease, say Chazal. The cow was diseased. It got some type of smallpox, which resulted in the cow having holes all over its body, pock marks all over its body. Rabbi Akiva's wife says to Rabbi Akiva, listen to me. What I want you to do is to take the cow. Says, you know we've got a cow? He says, yeah, we've got a cow. He says, you know the cow's got holes in it? She says, yeah, I know the cow's got holes in it. So Rabbi Akiva's wife says to him, take the cow, fill the holes in the cow, right? All over the body of the cow, there's these deep pock marks, these deep holes, fill them with earth. He says, yeah, take the cow, fill the pock marks with earth. She says, yeah. And he says to her, and then what do I do? She says, then you put flowers into these holes filled with earth. He said, oh, then I put flowers into these holes. And then what do I do? She says, then you walk down Rehov Yafa. Then you take the cow and you walk down the main street, right? Straight down Shifta Yisrael, straight down Malchai Yisrael, until you hit Kikar Shabbos Friday morning, 11 o'clock, when there's about 4 million people there. He says, sure. She said, yes, you are. He said, no way. She said, yes, you are. Well, we all know what the results of that type of argument between a husband and wife is. 10 o'clock next Friday morning, there he is with his cow. He's leading his cow with the holes in it, with the earth in it, with the flowers coming out of it, down Malchai Yisrael, right through Kikar Shabbos. He comes home. She says, what happened? He says, what happened? What happened? What happened? What do you think happened? He says, 400,000 Yerushalmi Cheder kids were screaming Meshuggah and throwing stones at me. 400,000 adults were laughing their head off. She said, fine. Comes the following Friday. He tries to sneak out of the house early. She says to him, you know, we've got a cow. He says, yeah. Take the cow, fill the holes up with earth, put flowers in it, walk down Malchai Yisrael straight through Kikar Shabbos. No way, yes you are, no you aren't, yes you are. Of course, off he went. He comes back, she says, what happened? He says, they brought their friends. There were millions of kids out there throwing stones and shouting with sugar, and there were millions of people out there cheering them on. Next Friday morning, he doesn't speak in. Doesn't help. There she is standing by the door. The cow. He says, no way, she says, the cow. No way, the cow. He takes the cow, and off he goes. He comes back, and she says, what happens? He said, what happened? He said, very interesting what happened. He said, by this time, they'd all brought their extended families. He says, there hasn't been such a crowd of people ever in the history of Israel standing in Kikar Shabbos on a Friday morning like there was this week. She said, what happened? He says, very interesting. There was total silence, and they're all mumbling to each other. So she said, what happened? He says, I went to listen to what they were saying. She said, well, what were they saying? They were saying, what's his angle? If a guy is walking down the street every Friday morning, the same time, with a cow, with holes in it, with earth in it, with flowers in the holes, he must be making it back somewhere. What's his angle? She said, you know what? She said, that's the story of life. You'll sit in that class with those five-year-olds, and the first, they'll laugh at you, and it will drive you mad. And the second week, they will laugh at you, and they will drive you mad. The third week, they'll say, what's his angle? He must know something that we don't know. Otherwise, he wouldn't be here. So he stuck it out. So he became Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, says the Gemara, goes off to learn. He goes off to learn for 12 years. He comes back, we all know the story. He overhears his wife saying to somebody that she doesn't care if he goes for another 12 years. He turns around, doesn't even bother going into the house and saying hello. Straight back to Yeshiva, and he sits there for another 12 years. 24 years later, he turns up, he's a Rabbi Akiva, a Gadol Hador. Because one of the first things that Rabbi Akiva learnt when he came initially, at the beginning of the 12 years, to the Yeshiva, one of the first things they told him, one of the first things that they taught him, but he took it seriously. They said to him, there's a klal. You want to succeed? There's a very simple principle as to how to succeed. There's a very easy way as to how to succeed. You know what the way is? The way in which you are going to succeed is Ein ha-Torah niknis ela b'mi she-meimis atzmei olav. You want to succeed in Torah? You want to acquire Torah? You want to become a Talmud Chacham? Which means, as we said, that you will have the right perspective. You will not be divorced from the world. You'll be part of the world. You'll live like everybody else, and you'll eat like everybody else. And you'll speak like everybody else, but your speaking will be different. The language you use will be different. The way you eat it will be different. Your perspective will be different. You know how you're going to be able to do that? Only if you understand one thing as a precondition. Torah is acquired. A person becomes a Talmud Chacham, quote unquote, if he's Meimis Atzmei Al Torah. What does that mean? Meimis Atzmei means he kills himself. What does that mean? He shoots himself? If you shoot yourself, you're dead. If you're dead, you can't become a Talmud Chacham. Right? Nobody ever became a Talmud Chacham by being dead. So what does it mean? That Meimis Atzmei. It means you kill everything around you other than Torah. That which to you, at this point in time, is the most important thing in the world. Within the context of Rabbi Akiva, who had a wife and children, there is nothing more important to a person than his wife and his children. You want to become a Talmud Chacham? Then you have to understand that you have to be menatic yourself. You have to be meimis yourself. You have to cut yourself off from that which is the closest to you at this point in time, namely your wife and children, and devote yourself totally to one thing. You have to be totally focused on one thing at the detriment of everything else. Otherwise it's not going to work. And Rabbi Akiva comes back after how many years? 12 years. Because he can't anymore. For 12 years he's divorced himself from his wife and his family. And he hears his wife saying she doesn't care another 12 years. Okay. Goes back for another 12 years. Can you imagine what was going on inside him? He left home. He left home when the kids were babies. There are children he hasn't seen for 12 years. If I'll give in, if I'll focus on something else, it'll destroy the continuity, it'll destroy the retzef, it'll destroy the 24 years, I'm not going to make it. But it's even more than that. There's Yerushalmi. And the Yerushalmi says the following. The Yerushalmi says that Rabbi Akiva learned for 24 years. Where did he learn for 24 years? In the same yeshiva that he started. Where have he started? He learned for 20 years. He sat down and he learned for 24 years. Says the Yerushalmi the following. Where did he learn? Says the Yerushalmi, there was a yeshiva. The yeshiva was run by two people. There were two Rosh Yeshivas. One was Rabbi Yeshua, and one was Rabbi Elazar. Says the Rishalmi, it's in the sixth parak of Psachim. The Rishalmi says that Rabbi Akiva sat for 13 years in his Rebbe's shir, in Rabbi Yeshua's shir, in Rabbi Eliezer's shir, they were switching, and he never said a word. He never said one word. Stum. 13 years. Why? Says the Rishonim, because he said, I'm a Talmud. A Talmud has to absorb. I haven't got what to say. Who am I to say anything? What have I got what to say? I have to hear. So he sat quietly. He didn't dare to say a word. Rabbi Eliezer turns around to Rabbi Yeshua and he says, we got a dodo here. We got a guy sitting here in this chair who doesn't know what's flying. He's part of the furniture. He's been here for 13 years. He hasn't said a word. Rabbi Yeshua probably turned around. I don't know, but I presume Rabbi Yeshua turned around to Rabbi Eliezer and said, is he paying tuition yet? Okay, fine, leave him. Gemara continues, and the Gemara says that one day Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer got into a tremendous argument about a certain halacha lemaisa. The Shaila came up, and Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer got into a fight about what is the psak halacha in this Shaila. Rabbi Yeshua said one thing, and Rabbi Eliezer said something else. All of a sudden, Rabbi Akiva gets up and he says, I have a raya that Rabbi Yeshua is right. And he brings his raya. And Rabbi Eliezer argues back with him. So he brings Rabbi Eliezer a second raya. So Rabbi Eliezer argues back with him. So he shlugs up the raya that Rabbi Eliezer brings. Basically, he demolishes Rabbi Eliezer. At which point, says the Rishonim, Rabbi Yeshua turned around and said to Rabbi Eliezer, so that's your lo yitzlach, huh? That's your dodo, huh? Said Bali Musa, what happened? 12 years, 11 months, 29 days, 23 hours, and 59 minutes, and 59 seconds, Rabbi Akiva says nothing, because he has to be a Mekabel. And all of a sudden, boom. Now, he talks. So the Bala Musa, no. The natural egoistic tendency of every individual is to state an opinion. We are all the world's greatest experts about all the topics that we know nothing about. You have guys walking into Leivaria whose maximum amount of learning that they did until the age of 18 is perhaps, if you are Makel, V'chol Hadeas, 4 minutes and 33 seconds, and they know what Torah is all about, and they know what the Ribono Shel Olam is all about, and they know exactly what everybody else is doing wrong, and why they are right. Because that is human nature. We are by nature egoists. The most difficult thing for a person is to keep his mouth shut. The most difficult thing for a person to do is to say, I am ignorant. I don't know. You know better than me. To be able to do that, that means you have to kill your entire ego. Rabbi Akiva understood that he's not going to get anywhere in Torah unless he can sit for 13 years and work on his ego. And it came a certain point where he said, that's it. I've already been misgabber on that. It's not a problem anymore. I know when to talk and when not to talk. I know what I do know and I know what I don't know. But it took Rabbi Akiva, who became the ultimate God will be Yisrael, the Moshe Rabbeinu can't understand his shir, it took him 13 years to be able to do that. It took him 13 years until he was able to say, maybe I know enough that I have the right to say something. The ability, the capacity to become a Talmud Chacham is dependent upon criteria. And the criteria are the ability to be able to say to oneself that if this is the matzav where I'm steiging, then everything else, which is a cheshbon that I shouldn't be in a class of 5-year-olds, is sheker. It's ego. And they'll laugh at me, Poseidon, they'll stop laughing eventually. And I can come up with all sorts of different tainas, why, no good, marishkeit, sheker. The ability to become a Talmud Chacham is based on the fact that a person understands that it doesn't happen in a year, and it doesn't happen in 2 years, and it doesn't happen in 3 years, and it doesn't happen in 4 years. T'yichidei skula. One man in the history of mankind, it happened in 13 years. So why is it we can't do it? Why is it that we're constantly in this situation where we haven't got this ability to be able to become Talmidei Chachamim? Rabbi Yisrael Salanter writes in the famous epistle, the letter that he wrote when he formulated the Musa movement, when he started off, he writes a letter, and he writes in his opening statement there a short sentence. He says, Ha'odom chofshi b'dimyayinai. A person has an imagination. A person has illusions. Dimyonai, these illusions, Meilichai, lead him, Shevev. These illusions cause him to deviate from the path, and they allow him to live in an illusion and to deny what his Seichel HaYosher is telling him. The fact that the person lives in an illusion is what creates a situation that it makes his seichel, it makes his intellect follow his desires. The seichel is so influenced by the dimyon that he's not even scared of the future. He's a maimon, he knows you will do an aveira, you will be punished. And he also knows what the punishment is going to be because there are descriptions, very vivid descriptions of what the punishments are. But the illusion that he lives in, the dimyon that he lives in, doesn't allow him to absorb that. In other words, the prime cause of our inability to get anywhere is the fact that we live in an illusion. That we're living in an imaginary world. We're not living in reality. And in fact, Chazal tell us that that's how it all started. That is the methodology. That is the vehicle of the Yetzer Hara. That's how the Yetzer Hara works. The way in which the Yetzer Hara works is by creating within the person an illusion. Where do we see this? We see this clearly from the very first attempt that the Yetzer Hara made to influence a person to do something which he was not meant to do. The Nachash and Chava. What did the Nachash say to Chava? The Nachash said to Chava, eat from the Yetzer Das. What's going to happen if you eat from the Yetzer Das? You are going to become godlike. That's what the Pasuk says, he told them. Vayisa, Kelekim, you will become like God. That's why he doesn't want you to eat from the tree. Because God knows that if you eat from the tree, then there'll be no difference between you and him. God said to Chava what? Don't eat from the tree. You will have Olam Haba, because you'll be listening to God and you'll have Olam Haza as well. What's better than sitting in Gan Eden and getting everything given to you on a plate without you having to do anything at all? If you do eat from the tree, what's going to happen to you? Bezeres hapecha teichel lechem, klolas, curses. Don't eat from the tree, you'll get Olam Haba. And you'll have Olam Haza. Both. What does the Nachash say? Eat from the tree, and you will become like God. Puts them into a dimyon. If God wanted them to be like him, he would have created them like him. What, he was stupid? Chava should have turned around and said, you idiot, you. He just created me, just now. A few moments ago. So if he wanted me to be like him, he would have created me like him. He didn't create me like him and told me not to eat from the tree, then he doesn't want that. No. What does she do? She immediately goes into this illusionary situation. So what does she end up? She loses Olam Haba, she loses Olam Haza, she loses everything. It all starts off because the Yetzer Hara is always creating within the person illusions. Where do we see this clearly? There's a portion of Torah that we all know, we learnt it in kindergarten. Which is such a classic example of all this. You see, we never think about it. The brothers of Yosef are starving. They're starving. They need food. There's only one place in the world where there's food. Where's that? Egypt. So they go to Egypt. They come to Egypt, they're scared. Were they scared? They're scared. They'll come, a whole group of people, and they were Giborim, right? So they all enter through a different shahr. Now the Torah tells us that everybody was coming from everywhere to Egypt in order to get food, because there was no food anywhere else. And here you've got these guys, right, all of them, and they're all coming, and they're all entering the city in a different way, in order that they shouldn't be noticed. And they all get arrested. They get arrested as spies. They get arrested as spies, and they're all brought together. How do they find them? How? Well, the answer is, Chazal, because when you came into Egypt, there was a law. And the law said the following, if you want food from Egypt, you have to come in and get a visa. On this visa, you have to do the following. You have to write your name, your father's name, and your grandfather's name. Now, this was before computers. And there are millions of people coming. Right? So somebody's sitting there and checking. Right? And he's putting the whole thing together, and boom, he finds out there's 10 brothers who came in through different ports of entry. So they think to themselves, you know, this is very strange. Why on earth do you have to put down your grandfather's name when you're coming in to get food? Unless they're looking for somebody. Or they're looking for a specific group of people. Now the brothers of Yosef knew that there was a strong possibility that Yosef was alive. Because they knew that they sold him. Why didn't this set off some sort of red light by them? Then what happens? They get arrested. Okay, so what happens when you get arrested? Suspected spy. Well, they take you off to wherever the local CIA is. and do what they do. Don't take it to the President of the United States of America, who then, all right, nowadays it wouldn't be possible, he hasn't got the intelligence, but in the days when there were normal white presidents, who, and don't take it to the President of the United States of America that he should interrogate you. Why on earth are they being taken to the guy who is the Mishnah Lemelech of Mitzrayim? He's doing personally the interrogation. A couple of low-level spies. Shouldn't it set off a red light? They are Maminim, right? They don't believe in all this Egyptian magic stuff, right? They know the Rambam that it's all Narishkeiten. And there sits this Egyptian guy, and he's got this Becher in front of him. And he looks at it, and he starts telling them. He starts telling them all sorts of things. He starts telling them all sorts of things about themselves. He tells them about conversations that they had when they were kids between themselves. He tells them about fights they had when they were kids between themselves. He tells them who they are, what they are. He tells them all sorts of things, all of them. Why doesn't it set off a red light? How the heck does this guy know all this? And they know that there is the possibility that Yosef's alive, but they never put the two and two together. And he's asking them the whole time, your father, is he alive, isn't he alive? You're a spy! Shoot the guy! Can you imagine the KGB saying, how's your father doing? Is he alive? Come on! Then he invites them for a meal! What does he do? He says, I know you guys won't eat, but look, I'll show you, it was shechted. The Gidanoshi was taken out. How come they haven't got a question, their problem? And then he says, you're a load of spies, so but you're Nebuch, your family's starving. So I'm going to let you all go back and take food back to your starving family, but just leave one of you here. Yes, you blew up the Twin Towers, but unfortunately, your father's unemployed. So leave your little brother here and we'll send you home to help out with the family finances. Why doesn't this set off a red light? Those stories are crazy. Every single thing that this man did to any normal human being would say, whoa, 1 minute. Who is he? He makes this big fuss that he sends them back and he keeps Shimon as a hostage. And the minute that they leave, he says to Shimon, right, here you are, off to the Hilton. That's what Chazal say, 5-star room. Have a shower and we'll send you in a black kosher Eidach Reidus Mahadrim meal. And it doesn't bother or faze Shimon in the slightest. He says to himself, nice Egyptian. Oh, what the heck is going on here? The answer is Poshet. How do they justify to themselves Bichlal the fact that they went and sold their kid brother as a slave to Arabs? Because they decided that he is a Raideth. Because they decided that he is a Rasha. That's what they decided. And the minute that they decided that he is a Rasha, the minute that they decided he is a Raideth, they have to live with this illusion. And the minute that you live with an illusion, everything has to fit into your illusion. Because the minute that you admit to yourself it's an illusion, then everything you did until now is a travesty. The only reason why you had the right to sell him to the Arabs was because he's a Russian, because he's a Raideth. If that was an illusion and that's not reality, and he's not a Russian, he's not a Raideth, then we're a Shoim. Then we went and sold an innocent person as a slave. No way. No way. So the illusion will blind you to reality. Says the Maseilas Yesharim, when a guy's stumbling around in the afela, in the darkness, what's the problem? Says the Maseiros Yesharim, the problem is that when you're stumbling around in the dark, two things happen. Either you can't see at all, or what you do see gives you the wrong impression. Says the Maseiros Yesharim, you see a person, you think it's a lamppost. You see a stop sign and you think it's a person. The Amud becomes an Adam and the Adam becomes an Amud. Says Shlomo HaMelech in Mishlei, man is a Baldimian. Man lives the whole time in illusions. And when you live in an illusion, you see things in your mind in an illusionary manner very clearly. What do you see? You see a car, and it becomes a lion. You see a lion, and it becomes a car. Because you're in our fellow. You see an innocent person, and he becomes a Ritzayach. You see a Ritzayach, he becomes an innocent person. It's entirely an illusion. And calls man, you're living in an illusion, you will not get anywhere. We face a huge problem. Let's call a spade a spade. We face a huge problem. We face a huge educational problem. Any guy who's here, yeah, let's be honest, he's here for a reason. If there wouldn't be a specific reason why he's here, then he wouldn't be here. He'd be in a different place. So if he's here, he's here for a reason. And kol hakavod. It's a big thing. The person makes a decision, he's going to come to a place, and he's going to try and move forward. He's going to try and become something. And every guy by Shem Shem, every guy at his pace. And in order that a guy should move at his pace, in order that a guy should steig, you have to empathize. You have to be sympathetic to his plight. And you also have to be ma'oided. You have to encourage. Now, how do you encourage a guy? By telling him how great he is. Great. You actually read the line in the Siddur and didn't create a disabled angel. Great. There's no comparison between the way you are today and the way you walked in here. Finally, you know what Masechta we're learning. You have shting, whoa, Rav Lapshin will go crazy. He'll give you 400 bucks, send you on a 5-day holiday to Elat, and everything. Why? Because you know that this man we're learning Makkos. And a chanama. We're human beings, and we need that. We need the word of encouragement. We need the illusion. The problem is that we start believing the illusion. That's when the problem starts. And once you start believing the illusion, you go nowhere. Yes, of course you have to look back and say to yourself, look where I was and look where I am. But then you have to be able at the same time to say to yourself, look where I am and look where I should be. And not to try and convince yourself that on an illusionary level you are actually a Yeshiva Bocher. Because there are definitions of what is a normal functioning Yeshiva Bocher. And we're talking about your middle of the road. We're not talking about your briskos hanging out in a lat. And we're not talking about your brisker who's learning 23 hours a day. We're talking about your normal guy. Your average normal guy is putting in a 4-hour Seder in the morning and a 4-hour Seder in the afternoon and a 3-hour Seder at night. That's your normal guy. It's the normal Yeshiva Bocher. And then besides that, he's having a good time as well. And Kozman, you're not doing that, you're not there. You can't turn around and say to yourself, I have got somewhere. When you come back after a Bein HaZman, and it's the third day of Zman, and because you went to bed an hour and a quarter after your normal bedtime, quote unquote, which all of a sudden becomes 4 hours earlier when you get to Yeshiva than it was Bein HaZmanim, for some strange reason, You missed the morning, Seder. I was tired. I overslept. You overslept. If you're working in a bank, you wouldn't oversleep. Come on. So you're not there. So don't try and call yourself a yeshiva bocher because you're wearing your titties out and you have a white shirt and a black pair of pants. All that does is make you into a zebra wearing titties, that's all. Doesn't make you into a yeshiva bocher. It may look nice on the outside. And it may be very important. I'm sure every lecturer will give plenty shmuzl about why it's very important. But don't live in an illusion. You can't live in an illusion because you were in a yeshiva for 3 years and you heard a shiur. If you take the maximum total amount of time of the shiur that you heard and what you understood from what you heard, this may be 5 shiurim, and say that's it. I'm a fasik yeshiva. I cannot be on my own. You can't be on your own. You haven't started yet. Until a guy sitting in this place of marriage with a chavrusa learning from 9 o'clock at night until 12 o'clock at night, until he's sitting in the morning for 3-4 hours, until he's sitting in the afternoon 3-4 hours, he hasn't started. Yeah. You're doing very well. Ba'asher u'shom for who you are. And you're steiging unbelievable. But you're not there yet, you're nowhere near it yet. And if you put yourself in this illusion that because I learned shtak for 4 days, I've made it, you will not become a Talmud Chacham. You will not move anywhere. And that's why I said in the very beginning, it's not something that I like talking about. Because in a certain way and from a certain angle, it's a little bit depressing. But it's a fact. It's a matzias, and as I said before, it doesn't apply to everybody here, but it applies to most people here, because Baruch Hashem, most of the guys sitting here, tuck at this man, are pushing, are trying. There are one or two exceptions, you know, the guys are, but they're losers in life. It's nothing to do with yeshiva, they'll be like that when they're 50 as well. They're losers. These are the guys who are not going to make it in life. I'm saying they're not going to make it. As Rabbi Lepkin says correctly, they're not going to make it in marriage, they're not going to make it in business, they're not going to make it in anything. They're losers. I'm saying every society has its losers, but we're talking about Raylan. But you can't kid yourselves that because I had a good few days or because I had a good week, therefore I've made it. Because the determining factor of whether you made it or not is not the illusion that you're living in. It's the reality. And the reality is Thursday night. Right, Thursday night, turn around, every single person, for themselves. Turn around and make a cheshbon ha-nefesh. But not an illusionary cheshbon ha-nefesh, a real cheshbon ha-nefesh. How much did I daven this week with kavana? Not how much did I stand there in front of this. And kavana doesn't mean shuckling away for 25 minutes. Kavana means pashut, pirush ha-milim, translating the words. How many of the tefillahs that I davened in the week was with kavana? If you're putting on tefillin at 11:30 in the Ezra's Mosque, you didn't daven, forget it. You went through the motions. It's very nice. Get a pat on the head from Rabbi Lapian. Very nice. Give you $50, 6 days, and you put tefillin on without missing. You're garnished! Big deal. How many hours did we learn this week? How many hours? Take all the time together. Take all the time together and then work it out. It's very simple. A week is 7 multiplied by 24, right? No great mathematics involved here. You don't need a calculator for that. Right? And then out of that, not how many hours were you physically in the four walls of the Beis HaMedrash texting? How many hours out of that 24 multiplied by 7 were you actually breaking your head over a piece of Gemara? Not running around because your head up such thick like cash from somebody and you picked up a half a thing and went in. We were actually hurrying away on a Gemara. And then say to yourself, where am I? Where am I at? Where am I holding? A normal yeshiva, again, I'm going to talk about masmidim. Right? A normal yeshiva, right? On a Shabbos in the summer, right? An average yeshiva bacha, your normal yeshiva bacha, not the guy who's the masmid, your normal yeshiva bacha, it's not shayach. You're talking about a Friday and a Shabbos. You're talking about 48 hours, right? On an Erev Shabbos, right? With a guy who's got shibudim, with a family, with a wife, with kids, with yeshiva bank accounts to cover, with who knows what, right? Manages to learn on a Friday 5 hours. I mean, if you sleep till 11 o'clock in the morning on a Friday, and you still spend 3 hours doing nothing after that, you still got 5 hours left. And on the Shabbos as well. So we're yeshiva.